All right. So, Isota, I don't know if you were on the line and could hear, but I was just letting folks know that you are joining us this afternoon to talk about your experience of working with the recent Musings article. So thank you for being here for that.
Thank you so much. Please guide me a bit, because there was so much to see, and
there was
also,
so much to
I'm
see.
So excited that...
Well, thank you for asking that, because it's been an interesting evolution, as you know, because that article came out some time ago. I can't remember exactly when, but certainly way before any of us are in the current life circumstances that everyone on the planet is in. And we had even asked you to be our guest to come speak about it, because there's just, you know, there's so much in that article, which on a, you know, very basic level, is looking at what it's like to practice, not just when, you know, things are so hard and I'm struggling and I'm up against something terrible, but also to be practicing all the time, even in the, quote, good times. And it was interesting that just as we were lining all of this up, the world got plunged into what many people would say are very challenging circumstances. And so we pivoted and we looked at some other things, to just really get the ball rolling in terms of supporting all of us in what's going on in the world. And as we looked at it, we realized, gosh, okay, let's go forward with looking at that Musings article, because there's so much application for that as well in this time. And so do you want to just start speaking? As you say, Isota, there's so much, but, you know, just kind of speaking to some of the things that you saw.
Yes, like going back to my experience. I hear an echo, but I guess you're hearing me correctly, right?
I'm hearing you correctly. I'm not hearing an echo. Yep.
Okay, so I will ignore the echo. So,
thank you.
To go back to my experience, when the article came out, that was a little bit before all this stuff that happened, I had noticed a process that was mistakenly associating practice with winning over ego, or looking at ego, or overcoming ego. Mm-hmm. Therefore, in the aspect of my life where I had not much ego, or in the moments of my life when there was not much ego, self-hate going on, I would kind of slide back a little bit, like lose and practice. And then, of course, ego would ramp up and I would go back to it again. All this thing was happening without me noticing, apart the last cycle when I did it on purpose. So I said, okay, let's not participate in whatever. And I could see ego getting back and then hopping back on. And so I was really curious about, okay, so what if I stay fit? Like if I wanted to apply a sport metaphor. Let's say I don't slide back. Well, at least not on purpose. Let's say, of course, I will slide back. What's available if life goes well, and if I practice when life goes well, and also if I practice in the aspect of my life where if I look, there isn't much self-hate, but there is more love and gratitude. And then it was perfect, because all these disasters happened, and so thank God I was not in the moment when I was sliding back, because it would have been much more difficult to face all this stuff.
Yes.
Does it apply?
Oh, absolutely, Isota. And first of all, that what you just said is such an important point. That so, as you were talking, and you know, you also mentioned using a sports analogy. So with that, I just picture an elite athlete, and there's that place of you know, getting out there and hitting the ball in the court, and it's fun, and I do it sometimes, kind of recreationally. But if I'm going for mastery, then I'm out there all the time. And if I'm, I would project, I don't know this, but I'll bet you any really elite athlete, someone who has been extraordinarily successful, will talk about loving it. We'll talk about love as a source of where that practice comes from. And I feel like that's what you're pointing at, that for many of us, we come to practice because life is really hard and I'm suffering hideously and I don't know how to get out of that conversation in my head. And it feels true that I'm a terrible person and all of those things. And we start to practice and that eases off. And invariably, everyone has the experience of like, whew, thank God that's over, right? And so then we slide back, exactly as you said. But then when we come back to it and we don't suffer again, oh, there we go, thank God. But at a certain point, it occurs to us, wait, do I just have to keep in that cycle? You know, sliding back and then getting back on, sliding back. What's possible if I stay with it through it? And that feels like what's offered to us in the Musings article. So great, I'm out of survival, I'm doing well, I'm loving life. Now, what is it like to practice with that? And that seems to me is what allows us to play, if you will, at a level of mastery such that when something does happen, we're ready. Not in the sense of it's easy, I like it, it's wonderful, you know, anything like that, but I'm here for it. And when I'm here for it, that really is a synonym for being ready and available for whatever is needed.
Yes. What really resonated listening to you was when you said that we love practice, because loving something so much and limiting it to the bad moments is terrible, you know? It would be like calling your best friend just to complain. It doesn't make sense, yeah.
Yes, exactly so. It doesn't make sense, right? You don't want to do that. And that it strikes me that in a time like this, that, you know, a lot of people in Sangha have actually spoken about sort of the aspect of feeling like really enjoying the change in routine and being having a lot more quiet and that sort of thing and feeling guilty about that. And yet it seems like there's so much possibility for us to recognize, you know, if we use that tool of directing attention to love, that so there I am, maybe it is challenging for me what's going on right now. And I can notice that and I can choose to direct my attention where I want it to be. And that is going to be a service to me and very likely everyone around me.
Yes, and well, for example, I was exactly in that situation, no, of feeling guilty for enjoying my time at home. Mm-hmm. And I could really see exactly both aspects, you know, like, okay, I'm trained to see that ego is making me feel guilty and to ignore it. Yeah. Okay, so now that I'm ignoring it, like, what's here? Yeah. And I don't know exactly the answer now, but it's super interesting to look at it.
Yeah, that's so well put. In other words, that skill that was being pointed at, the possibility that was being pointed at in the Musings article, is one that you used. So there, you know, I'm actually really experiencing, you know, some well-being here in these circumstances. And then the guilt process comes in and you're able to turn your attention away from that. That's kind of step one, right? But then it doesn't stop there. Then you have the practice of being able to look at what then comes out of that and the, you know, well, I don't know what comes out of that. And it sounds like you're still in that exploration as well. But that's the exploration that we can be in.
Yes, and one more thing that comes up that I can see ego like wanting to scam me would be, so now from now on you never have to look at ego again and just report pure happiness and bliss. And I don't want to fall for that either. No, it's just looking at more things, but not ignoring that, I guess.
Yes, and that's such a place of expanded awareness, right? So we don't have to have our attention on ego, but the awareness is expanded to know, oh, it's always back there, working its next angle. That's okay. I'll see it.
Yes. Oh, that's so exciting.
I know. It's so fun. And so, well, thank you for hanging in there this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Technology is always just a part of the deal these days, I think. But thanks for being with us, and thanks for being willing to speak about your experience.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
And thank you so much for doing all this.
Oh, yeah. I can speak for all of us, I think. The entire Sangha, it's a win-win, a pleasure. Thank you, Sota.
Gasho.
Gasho. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Sota. And Jen, just give me a moment here to mute you.
I can do it on my side. Thanks, Michael.
Perfect. Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined this afternoon by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hey. It's exciting times technologically. Perhaps a little too exciting sometimes getting all these shows on the air, and I'm grateful that we have the technology to come together, and I'm grateful that it works.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and it goes directly to what Jen and Sota were talking about, right? That our ability to be present,
yes.
That's all we're practicing. And so we're practicing having that expanded awareness no matter what. So when there's when there's challenging circumstances, we can be there for it. And when the circumstances are fine, we can be there for it. It's the ultimate and the unconditional, right?
Yes, yes, yes. And what I saw when you said that is, if I can bring the same willingness and attitude to the quote good times and quote bad times, then that's what I'm going for.
Yeah, exactly so.
And I have announcements here.
Go ahead, Michael.
Every empty pot is actually not empty. It's full of potential, perhaps waiting for us to bring curiosity, experimentation, and discovery to preparing what nourishes us. Join us for The Joy of an Empty Pot virtual workshop this Saturday starting at 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Lots of options for fun, joy, and excitement are on the menu. This workshop is free. In stressful times, we can turn to practice for support. And one of the most compassionate tools we have is recording and listening. A new 6-week conference call retreat in recording and listening will teach 6 key skills of the recording and listening practice. This new class is on Wednesdays beginning April 8th. Reflective Listening Buddies is one of our longest lived and most popular programs for a reason. In this year of exploring communication, there is no other support quite like it for practicing presence, requiring participants to show up for themselves and another every week for 30 minutes. A new quarter starts April 15th, and the deadline to register is tomorrow, April 1st. Is conditioning talking you out of a commitment that you really want to keep? If so, and if you would like some support, sign up for our new Keeping Commitments Buddy Program starting April 15th. Participants will be paired with a partner for accountability and support during this kind and compassionate training. Registration for this new offering also closes tomorrow, April 1st. And for these and other opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for today's show. If you'd like to talk with Ashwini today, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. is great.
Michael, before we bring on our first caller, I just want to mention two other things that are in the works and didn't get into the schedule of, for announcements today.
Okay.
The first one is that Zambia has just been has its first virus cases being reported, and so we've been working with Teresa on what that means to the property. And so an update on that will be posted shortly to the Africa website as people are following along in terms of how we're working with that. And then secondly, we have a Sangha project in the works, and so stay tuned for an email where we have somebody from Sangha, actually two people from Sangha, who are contributing to the coronavirus efforts by making masks for healthcare providers. And so we're going to do a little workshop and some support around anyone who wants to sign up to do this project and to provide masks for their community. And I think the support call is this Friday, so watch out for an email around that.
Okay. Okay, great. Great. Thank you for that, Ashwini. And I think we are ready for our first caller here, Ashwini.
Excellent.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, this is Todd from Seattle, Washington.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Todd.
Hey there. Hey, I have a basic contact question. Well, I don't know how basic it is, but sometimes I feel like I need Zen for four-year-olds. But I'm just struggling with a real, just kind of a breakup, honestly. You know, I moved to Seattle back in August, and been living alone for the first time, or living with myself, been trying to say that, for 3 months. And then I met a partner, and we got very serious in 2 months, like really close. And then I just kind of got dumped, like a bad habit. She just kind of decided that, you know, the virus hit, and she's got other stuff going on. And you know, I have this kind of habit of like idealizing the partners that I've been with. You know, I've been recording and listening a lot. You know, but I've struggled. You know, I've been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress, and so I, you know, kind of have, you know, these abandonment issues that I've typically struggled with. And what's interesting, well, I guess it's ego. I mean, it's not that interesting that I've had the same issue with the four major relationships I've had in my life for the last 30 years, where I have idealized my partner and then typically been broken up with and then just felt really, really abandoned. And so I was just looking for some real basic guidance on how to deal with just a really hard breakup. That's, you know, the two-handed recording helps a lot, but I'm just so struck with grief sometimes. I just know I'm getting bamboozled, and I think I just, you know, need some help as far as how to see through that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so much in what you've already done with practicing with it, right, Todd? Because what I heard you say is, first of all, we always want to accept the situation, right?
Yes.
Part of where the suffering comes in is that somehow or the other, it shouldn't be happening. Or if it is happening, how I feel is not an appropriate response to it, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It is hard. You are. You have been dumped.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of disappointment and betrayal and what ifs and what could you have done differently, right? There's a human being who's actually going through a process of loss and grief, right?
Yeah,
so,
totally.
The first step in anything that we do in practice, which is why we offer the two-handed recording, is because it's an awareness, and we were looking at this on the radio show in the morning. Awareness is an acceptance, firstly, right?
Mm-hmm.
This happened, and I'm really, really sad and unhappy.
Yeah.
And feeling alone and frightened, and I'm having a human experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Not, yeah. I need to be entertaining something that says just because it's happened to me three times before, I shouldn't be having that experience right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
abandoning Todd all over again.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we start with the two-handed because it's a way of acknowledging for him everything that's going on for him.
Mm-hmm.
And having him not being abandoned in that experience, which is what,
yeah.
which is the process that's happening, right? So whether or not you broke up in a relationship, the conditioning that's there constantly negates him and his experience, and is therefore rejecting and abandoning him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that two-handed recording offers him an ultimate experience of being able to say, it's hard, and I'm upset, and there's something that's going on for me that's very challenging. And it would be nice if someone just said, it's all right, Todd. It's okay to have that experience. I completely understand it. I'm so
yeah.
sorry.
Yeah.
Right? However many times he needs to hear that.
Yes.
Because it might take him a while to, he might never get over it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And that's all right, because if something happened to your kid, that's what you would do. It doesn't matter how many times that child would come to you and say, I'm upset that this happened to me. You're not going to say, okay, get over it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Well, you might, but if you
yeah.
identify. But there is a way in which love never says, okay, it's time for your grief to be over. There's a timeline on getting over loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So that's
well,
the
yeah.
first level that... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, yeah. And that's, you know, I've been trying to just kind of say, you know, yeah, it's sad. I mean, anybody would be sad. I mean, you've had that experience, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've been trying to allow me to have that. It's just, I just
yes.
ego, man.
But that's
just,
only the first...
That's
yes.
only the first,
okay.
Right? Yeah, okay.
Yes. So you want to be there with the human, right? The
yeah,
human
yeah.
being is going through an experience. So then the
yeah.
next level of practice is what you've already seen. It's a pattern for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? That there is a specific way in which this keeps happening, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
when we take it to the realm of beliefs and assumptions, process
oh.
mapping. It's
okay.
what we do in the year-long retreat, which is to see... So yes, there is a human experience, but what is the ego process, the set of beliefs and assumptions that this person is being controlled by that causes the suffering and causes the repetition of the suffering? So not
mm-hmm.
only do we see how the pattern happens, so you can tell me, I get together with someone, I idealize my partner, they dump me, and then I feel really awful, and I have these abandonment issues. But that's
yes.
telling the story. It's not actually breaking down the process of suffering, the way we work with breaking down process of suffering, right? So
yes.
you could take any part of that story and really analyze it from the perspective of what is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate doing for you in all aspects of that process? Not for
mm-hmm.
you to change it, fix it, or fix him, but for you to understand how this program of suffering keeps repeating itself. What does it tell you what is idealizing a partner mean? You could break that down. What are the voices saying? What beliefs and assumptions are being maintained? What's the self-hate in it that's trapping you in messages of negation? What's
mm-hmm.
the karma in that place? Okay, then what leads to breaking up? What leads to feeling bad? What is your abandonment issue? If you just take that piece of it and break it apart in the way that we break apart all suffering processes, you're going to see a whole lot about how you're controlled and why that pattern keeps repeating.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you really have abandonment issues? That's the story. Well, what does that even mean? It means you feel a certain way and you have a label attached to it, but does that mean? And that process of looking at the voices, looking at the beliefs and assumptions, looking at the projections, looking at the subpersonalities that are there, looking at the self-hate that's being... That's how you apply the template of the year-long to the process of suffering you're in around abandonment issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll just produce a whole level of insight into how that conditioning is being maintained for you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can look to see, is that really true? Is it really my experience? How can I create a different pattern? How can I give the messages that need to be given to that human being that counteract that conditioning? What behaviors can I practice? How do I even practice with this if I don't know what it is?
Yes, yeah. Well, yeah,
right?
I was just going to say I'm excited because I signed up for Zen Awareness Coaching again, and that's tomorrow. So I'll be able to do a process map about it tomorrow.
Exactly,
so,
exactly, right? And that process assists you to disidentify, not to be the person in it, but to be the person who's seeing it done to this human being and to be able to know what are the components of it so intimately that you can become aware the next time you find someone you want to be with, for example, part of the process you're in. And that now you're on that. It's not that it will go differently, but it then becomes that giant workshop that is what I was talking about. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm curious about it. I want to know what has controlled this human being and made him so unhappy for so long, if there's some possibility that the process could be different.
Yes.
That he doesn't have to come from a place of suffering, but can come from a place of freedom. No matter how the relationship goes, he's going to be all right at the end of it, right? His well-being is not controlled by a program and a story. And that's what motivates us to do this practice.
Got it. Okay. Sorry, I know mine cut off for a second there, so I'm glad it's being recorded. You can hear me now still, right?
I can hear you clearly.
Okay, cool.
That sounds like a very good next step, and it's very fortunate you have the process map assignment tomorrow, so you could get on it.
And just a quick question, because you're right. I've totally always said I have abandonment issues. Is that ego telling me that?
Well, it's less important whether it's ego telling me that or not, other than the awareness that it's a story.
Okay.
Right?
It's your story with telling myself, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so a story that's being told. Let's not even try to decide whether you're who are you, if there is no self, then who's the you that's telling the story, right? We could go all the way to the spiritual dimension of that.
Yeah.
We're just exploring So you hear a voice in your head saying you have abandonment issues. Is it simply just a voice in the head? What does that really mean? And then you can just explore that. Oh, I have abandonment issues because I hear a voice that often tells me you're not worthy and that's why you keep getting dumped. Is that what abandonment means? Does it mean, oh, I hear a voice in my head that says you're always going to be alone, no one likes you? What does that mean? You don't even know that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So we just are told, okay, you have abandonment issues, and then we go sit in a corner feeling awful.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in some very, very intuitive sense, right, Todd, that we can't be abandoned in a universe in which we're connected to everything and everyone. We don't feel that way. So it's important to find out what causes us to feel that way, that we don't belong.
Yeah.
That without another person, somehow or the other, we don't get reflected and we're not valid and we're not worth it and we can't be happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the lie, right? And so now it's important. I mean, the truth is that we're all connected. No one is abandoned. Everyone has an equal part to play in the universe. If there's some intuitive sensing of that, then the question is, how can I easily be persuaded that that's not true?
Yeah.
I need to find out.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. It's funny how I'm breathing easier now. Just.
Well, it's true, right? Because when we're in it, we have no idea how to get out of it. And that, I think, is one of ego's biggest bamboozles, is confusion and complexity and the same thing over and over, and you can't see it. We can't see it because we're programmed not to see it. And when we have a framework to hang the whole of ego on so we can look at it, then we're not in it. And so there's so much more room to breathe.
Yeah, literally, for sure.
So. Literally, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Wow, so helpful, Shwini. Thank you so much, and thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Doug.
Okay, go happy.
Keep us posted, okay?
Oh, I will. Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. Ashwini, a couple things dropped in for me in that conversation. The first of all, which I thought is just so critical, is to accept the human and love the human for whatever experience is happening right now, especially these really difficult ones.
Yeah.
And the second thing is to look at the pattern that Todd was describing there, and to, you know, seek the guidance by calling in and getting a Zen awareness coach. It's just fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. It truly is. We cannot see our own patterns. So
yes.
That's helpful when we get assistance to see them, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we have another caller here.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Laura from San Diego. Can you hear me?
Hey, Laura.
Yes. Hi, Laura.
Hey, this is the first time I've used the Start Meeting app, and I'm so grateful for it.
New beginnings.
Right. Okay, so I have a big piece of content that happened the first or second day of the pandemic or stay-at-home order. And it, what the previous caller was talking about, I was just placing my content in the whole process. And it's interesting because, like, ego doesn't – oh, see, I can feel the tears. Ego doesn't want me to share the content because there's a lot of shame about what happened. But I also don't want to give it power, so I've been – struggling with, like, do I talk about it or do I just talk in jest or, you know, around it? And it feels like it's kind of important to talk about, but I'm open for guidance around that.
Yes, if the human being wants to say what's going on for her, then she should have the floor, regardless of what can be said.
So I'm really ashamed that this is happening to me, but I got served on Tuesday, and I'm getting sued. And it is just, I'm so grateful for practice because I could be off in it. I mean, there's a lot of emotion there, but I have just been really practicing with staying in this moment and not going to either fear in the future of what will happen to me or fear of the past of, like, a decision that I made that led to this. And so in the year-long... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say something, but go ahead. I think you're going somewhere with that.
Well, what I've been looking at in the year-long retreat is this, like, really curious about the I that gets activated, and that's where the suffering is. And I feel like I've been doing a really good job of just, like, we don't know, we're not going to review, we're not going to regret, we don't know. If there's karma here to see, I'm committed to looking at that and just do the next indicated step of, like, what do I need to do to like, what's practically required that I need to do in those steps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the shame got activated, the shame got triggered, and what you're practicing with is to just be here, coming to this place of, this is a new moment, what is the only thing I can do in this moment, rather than letting the voices take you into fear of the future or judgment of the past in terms of what it is that you did that you shouldn't have done, blah, 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 right?
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. Or getting defensive about, like, what I did, there was nothing wrong with what I did. Like, I have every, you know,
that's
just
right.
I, on all sides of the duality, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and like we talked about with Todd, right? There is a human being who's having a whole experience of all of that conditioning coming at her, and shame being triggered, right? Because I would project, right, Laura, and again, Steve, this is your experience, that part of, if you look at every which way, or what's going, you know, I'm inadequate to what's going to happen in the future, or I was guilty of what happened in the past, and therefore I have to be defensive, is predicated on you having done something wrong. In other words, it's such a classic case where someone levels a criticism at us, and we're so conditioned to go to, I am to blame.
Right.
And then to feel the shame, rather than just look at it and go, okay, this happened. I don't know whether the information is appropriate or not. It's just something that happened. And we don't, I mean, it's that hard, very, very hard place of not taking it personally, right? Which is why you work with it on a practice level, at the first level, to go, well, it is not helpful if I'm going to indulge the conversation. So let me drop the conversation, right? That's what you've been doing. And just staying here to what's the next thing I can do on a practical level. And then to work with whatever arises for you. And it sounds like shame is a very emotional place that is part of the process of suffering that you are exploring.
Right. So what I am seeing is I'm practicing, well, if I did do something that, you know, was unskillful or came from an identified place, like practicing that unconditional love. And even if I didn't do something that was unskillful and it still, and it bumped into someone else's stuff and then they're doing whatever they do, like, how do I bring that unconditional love to her no matter what? I don't need to defend her, but I also, or indulge the shame around it, but just be with her.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Exactly right. Yes. That how do I bring the unconditional love and acceptance to her no matter what? Because there is a way in which we separate circumstances that are hard or challenging, right or wrong, based on whatever is going on, right? Versus the person is never wrong. The person is never judged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's what we talk about in child psychology. I might not like your behavior, but I love you.
Right. And so it was interesting.
Go ahead.
Well, it was interesting when you were talking with Todd or with the previous caller, and that talking about being with the child unconditionally. And you know, I can see when I get identified with my children that it does become conditional. And when I can stay in the unconditional, I can be with them no matter what. When I get identified and their behavior kind of activates something within me, my behavior becomes conditional.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and not only conditional with them, conditional with you, right? The identification is the identification. And what you're realizing is, when I'm identified, there's no unconditional operating for Laura. So why would there be any unconditional operating for your kids, right? You can't, it's the analogy of you can't ask a starving child to be generous.
Right. Yeah. And so I'm actually eager to do what you and the previous caller talked about, a process map, and really explore it, take it really step by step to really provide support for this whole process as it unfolds.
Absolutely. Because there is, I mean, inherently, as we always say, there isn't anything to be ashamed about getting sued.
Yeah, that's a belief that, I have to really pay attention to.
Because that's the belief, because it's not that. It's not getting sued that causes you to suffer. It's that it gets translated into something that you did that you should feel ashamed of, or something that's going to happen to you that you should be afraid of. Those were the two things you came up with initially, right? That's what produces the action gets translated into an inner message, an inner world of beliefs and assumptions that then cause the person to suffer as a result of an external trigger that you could, if you weren't identified and didn't have that karma, or that karma didn't get activated, to go, okay, well, I got sued. Now what do I do about that? Right? Without all right. the suffering attendant to it.
Right. Yeah, it makes me think of that Zen story where the person brought a baby to a monk, right? That
yeah.
and then right, mm-hmm. that just dropped
yeah.
in.
Yeah, that everybody's conditioned to believe that if you're a bad person and should feel completely humiliated if you had a child out of wedlock. And the Zen teacher says, okay, well, I'll take the child and bring it up. That
yeah.
that there's a way in which only the insecure feel like they need to be defended, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if I don't have anything going about it, then I don't suffer over it, regardless of whether it's true or not. And that's
right.
that's what you're practicing with, which is clearly triggering something.
Right.
And it behooves me to explore all of the conditioning around that that produces such a level of suffering and such an orientation to this action or this piece of information.
Right. Okay. That feels really helpful. And I guess what I'm just imagining is like, gosh, what if I could go through this whole process and really confront suffering around this karmic pattern of shame?
Yes, and that's why we say everything that happens to us is a gift, right? It can feel horrific from the identified perspective. And
right.
then when we step back the way you're looking at it, you have curiosity and hope even that it's your best opportunity to see and see through what causes you to suffer. And that changes, that's a huge disidentification, right? Laura, you're not the person in it anymore. You're the practitioner observing the whole thing as a workshop, ready to assist the human being if she gets identified. But her job is to be in that disidentified and curious place, using it as an awareness practice workshop.
Hmm.
Without any attachment to any outcomes, right?
Right.
That you won't
exactly.
You won't suffer, or this is going to be the end of all your suffering, or you won't get sued. None of those are in the picture. And if they do, they just go on the process map, right?
Right. 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 Yep. Okay. Yeah. Because that happened this morning as I was recording around. There is this really core belief that if I'm just practicing hard enough, sincerely enough, all of that, then bad things won't happen. Quote unquote.
Yeah. It's such a, and we can recognize what a young place that is, right?
Right.
If I do everything right, then everyone will treat me okay.
Right.
And it's the place where we have to grow up that the well-being is what I get to practice. The well-being that is undisturbed is what I get to practice with. Which is not dependent on any external circumstances, and that well-being comes from no matter what happens, I can be with it. Right? It's not that I don't experience pain. It's not that I don't experience difficulty. It's just that no matter what I'm experiencing, I'm with it. I can be with it. I can be with her in compassion as she goes through it.
Right.
Because all we ever want to do is to avoid it, right? Avoid it, or ignore
right.
it, or bury it, or make it better, or fix it. All of which is
yep.
denial, not being with.
Right, right, which goes on the process map, right? Because those are huge
exactly right.
processes. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Deep yeah. Gesho, thank you all for your persistence and your role modeling around the patience and flexibility around all of this and the generosity.
Well, thank you, Laura. You take care of her now.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. Ashwini, I'm continually amazed by the courage of everyone calling into the show and, looking for a way out of the suffering. It's amazing to me.
Shall we just bring on our next caller, Michael, just to keep rolling?
Yes, sure. Did you want to do a break for a sponsor, or you want to go straight to the next caller?
Let's just go straight to the next caller. We don't want any more technical difficulties.
Okay. Hold on one sec here. Let me get to the queue. OK. Okay, that color is no longer there. Okay, here we go. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey there, this is from Seattle.
Is
Can
that
you hear
Kate?
Me okay? Kate calling from Seattle, yes.
Hi,
good,
Kate.
I recognized your voice. I couldn't hear your name.
The one car, I'm out for a little walk in the middle of a hailstorm, and the one car that drove by the whole time just happened to go by then. Thank you for having me on today, and I just so far have been just blown away by all the practice opportunities that we have right now, and I'm just so grateful. So I want to say thank you to everyone that's working on that. It's deeply appreciated.
It's amazing how the Sangha comes together, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible. It's really incredible, and it's such a powerful practice opportunity right now. Pretty grateful for all that everyone's doing. So I have a question about subpersonalities.
Okay.
I have one that I'm working with right now that's called Defeated. And she's the one that kind of takes the brunt of everything, pretty much. And, you know, always feels pretty exhausted and, you know, wants to have a little bit more of a voice or a lot more of a voice, wants to be heard. So I've been doing a lot of work with that. And I noticed that she kind of then started not having much to say. And I was just sort of curious, do subpersonalities change over time? Or, like, is it just sort of a quiet moment now for her and that in another set of content that she might reemerge in a stronger way? And I guess it's sort of a general question about subpersonalities, but that's kind of specifically what I'm looking at. It feels a little bit like she's underground, and it's related to what the good news update a little bit, like kind of things are going well for her right now because, well, there's just a lot of practice around supporting her. So I think she hasn't had as much to say.
Well, let me turn this around a little bit and do the Zen thing on you, Kate.
Okay.
Do you have a sense of why you're asking that question?
Oh. Well, there's always someone who's trying to figure it out and get it right. So,
Because what would that get her?
Well, that always seems to be motivated by love to that sub-personality feels very conditional and that it has to be earned. Mm-hmm. And by doing things right is a way of getting that.
So the process I just did with you, Kate, is the process that we're interested in.
Say that last line again. It's the process to
The process I was facilitating you towards is the process we're interested in, right?
Okay.
Because what we're tempted to do, what conditioned mind tempts us to do is to ask questions in order to know, within quotes. If I know the answer to this, then somehow or the other I'll have something or I'll know something, right? So it's really not about working out whether the subpersonality is dormant or gone away or whatever else. It's as soon as that arises to take the step back that allows you to see the process you're in now. Because having the answer to that isn't going to help you in any way.
True.
But always questioning the process I'm in is the only place we want to train.
Okay.
To be in the inquiry, not in the answer.
That makes so much sense. Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Because who knows? I mean, we say aspect of the personality, but what is an aspect of the personality? You and I could have a long theological discussion of whether an aspect of the personality is an aspect of life or an aspect of ego, and we'd get nowhere.
Right.
But what you know is, oh, I have an experience with this thing that I'm working with, that let's call an aspect of the personality, and these are the voices that she hears, and this is her worldview, and she doesn't seem to be very open right now. And what I notice then when I see that is this other aspect of the personality that gets activated, that wants to figure it out and wants to know, because, right?
Yeah.
We're in that place of constantly just looking rather than concluding and going to sleep.
Yep. Oh, God, it's so, like, I can really see that now. And it was so really helpful because, you know, there's a whole line of noodling around that, like, well, what's going on? And if you knew, you could look for it, or you'll, you know, be able to be on them. Like, there's just this whole series that comes up with that.
Yes.
And all it's doing is moving attention away from awareness.
Right. Okay, she's not here. Good. What's here now? That's what I want to look at, right? And what's here now seems to be, I'm noodling this. So let's drop that. And then what's here now? Delight. Oh, okay. Right? I keep expanding the awareness and moving the perspective to just staying with the inquiry.
Okay.
Because what is inquiring is what I want to be identified with. The awareness.
Okay.
Does that help?
Oh, it helps so much because the noodling is a very familiar process, and it's almost as if now I'm seeing this belief is if I could just figure it out, maybe then I wouldn't be suffering. Yeah.
Yes.
Is sort of the belief under that.
Yeah, and so we go back to that line, right? We're not here to create or attend to beliefs. We're here to pay attention.
Yes.
And so seeing the belief allows us to no longer believe it. Going back to paying attention rather than creating and clinging to the belief, right? Which is what answers are, because they're static. They're just beliefs. I tell you something, you believe it's true, and there we are. The inquiry stops.
Okay. And what was the line that you used to kind of turn it around? Just noticing noodling and then saying, what's here now?
I asked you why you were asking me that question.
Okay.
Right? As opposed to answering it. Which, if I was in a karmic, if I was identified with my karma, I would give you the answer. And then we'd all have to go home.
Yep. Okay. That's really, really helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kate.
I'll have a good chuckle about that and listen to it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Take care.
You take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Kate. And noodling, Ashwini, I know noodling well. And I'm really grateful to have a little exploration around that and to recommit to not noodling.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we have time for at least one more caller here.
Excellent.
Okay. Just get to the queue here. Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Ashwini. It's Mark from Chicago.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hi. So I have a question kind of related to the email class in the morning. The thing I saw today that I would want to or need to give up related to karma was the desire for happiness rather than happiness itself. And so an example of the process is, well, if I get this new car, I'll really be...
Oh, that's so subtle, Mark. Yeah. That is so subtle. Mm.
Yeah, if I get this new car, I'll really be happy. And so then I get the new car, and I immediately you know, take my pulse and check my blood pressure, and I'm not quite as happy as I thought I was going to be. And so it's, and then it starts out, wow, how did I make this mistake? Did I should have made more planning. If I'd have bought the right car, I would really be happy. And it just kind of goes around, you know, a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So let's explore that letting go of the desire for happiness, right, Mark? Because what I heard you say is, so you get the car, this is what will make you happy, and then you realize that you checking in to something to see whether it made you happy or not, the answer is no. And so then you get into the conversation around, oh my God, then you should have done more planning, because if you'd gotten the right car, you would be happy. Do you sense a theme around all of that conversation?
Yeah, the theme is about achieving something rather than experiencing the something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, achieving something rather than experience something. And would you say that what it's saying to you is whatever achievement, the accomplishment or the acquisition is what's going to give you happiness, right?
Yes. Yes.
And that's what we have to let go of, is the belief that something causes happiness rather than just happiness is.
Yes.
That's why we're unhappy, because we believe that something, that an object allows us to be happy, the acquisition of the object, the experience of it keeps happening that we're not happy, or at least there's a short bit, a small amount of time where I might feel flush with success, but we attribute that to the object, not the fact that we're no longer hankering after it or believing that it's going to give me what I want.
Right. And a different facet that I see of the whole thing is that it's not just having the object that I think will make me happy. It's the perfection of the process that leads me to the choice that will make me happy. So I mean, it's kind of funny, because my mom always told me when I was a little kid, she could just throw the toy out and give me the instruction manual, because I enjoyed reading about it more than I enjoyed actually having the toy. And I'm still kind of in that same frame where I will spend months researching whatever it is I'm going to buy or build. And to me, the perfection of that process to get the thing that I think will make me happy is almost the end pursuit in itself. And that's even more disappointing, because, of course, there's always going to be something wrong with whatever process I come up with. And so that's the thing I focus on, and it leads to disappointment rather than happiness.
Oh, brilliantly stated, because it becomes the object, right? That's what we see in conditioning. It can objectify anything. So we're conditioned to believe that the car is the object, but really what you're seeing is the process of researching has become the object. So the object never gets you what you desire, which is happiness. Right?
Right.
Because
right.
the same principle towards the car applies to the objectification of the process, which is the process isn't going to make you happy. But here's the thing to consider, Mark, which is a slight reframe. I don't know if this is something. I bet if you're 100% present in the researching process, like wholeheartedly giving yourself to it, you actually do get a lot of happiness out of the researching process. That you're there, you're enjoying it, you're fully absorbed, you like what you're doing, you enjoy, you really, really love reading the instruction manual and understanding it. What happens is that during that process, there's no conversation being entertained that you could be doing, I mean, there may be, but if you're enjoying the process of research, it's likely that you're really, really happy. Not because you're researching something, which is the object, but you're here for what you're doing, which happens to be researching.
Yes.
Right? And that the way
that
in which
exactly
conditioning
right.
is coming in to say, to take that enjoyment away from you, is by making it an object and saying, well, you're not happy now because you didn't get the perfect car, which implies that you're process is imperfect and there's something wrong with you. But really what happened is I had a wonderful time researching, being present and learning all the details of the car. And I was really present to that process. Then I got the car and then I listened to a conversation. In fact, I checked conditioned mind to see whether I'm happy.
Yeah.
And happiness is not a mental process, right? Because if I got out of the conversation, I would be here with the car and I would have 100% within quotes flavor of happiness of being present to the car, which would be the same process as being present to researching the car. Because presence is happiness. Any time out of the conversation, and so it's robbed you of all of your pleasure, right? Not just not being present to the pleasure of being in front of the car you've acquired, but also negates the entire process of enjoyment and happiness you had researching it.
Yeah.
So we could reframe what you have to let go is the conversation.
Yes, exactly. Yes, right. And, you know, it's interesting because I've looked at this on retreats and various, you know, workshops, and the first place I see this start to go off the rails is I don't want to stop the research because I think, well, if I make a choice and I get to the end of the research and I make a mistake and it's not right, then I'm going to punish myself. So I just let the research go on forever. And it's like a procrastination thing, and it becomes the end in itself. And then there's just all kinds of little steps along the way where I get dinked off of just moving ahead and being present and doing the things that you just described.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an important pattern, right? Because that, going back to the first caller, once you observe, so you've observed several patterns, right? One, the object is what's going to give me happiness. Two, the research is, I'm really happy and enjoy doing research, but the way in which that enjoyment is negated is by conditioning, making the researching an object. Then there's another pattern, which we were looking at in the workshop on chores recently, that it becomes a distraction, right? It becomes a tool of ego for you to continue to just research without making a decision, because it has trained you that if you make a decision and there's another belief that it's possible to make a bad choice. You could buy the car, but you can't return it. And so you're something wrong with you for having made the bad choice, right? So there's a place you can practice, which is there is no mistake, right? So I'm present to the, if I'm not in the conversation when I acquire the car, I won't be listening to something that tells me this is a bad choice, right? So there's a place to practice there. All I'm pointing out is once you recognize a pattern, there are many practice places that you can train with. So you could say, for example, if you love to research and you know that that conditioning is going to come in and make you procrastinate, you could say, I will only research for 30 days. Then my practice at the end of 30 days is to toss a coin and make a decision. And you can practice with that and see everything that arises for you. And you don't have to make the decision. You don't have to practice that with something as investment intensive as a car, right? We practiced that with making a 7-minute timer at home while we were doing a chore. Every time the timer goes off, you stop doing what you're doing. And so you can train with the process that you're seeing that you're controlled by in order to be able to have that skill when it comes to a larger piece of karma.
Yeah. You know what has really helped me on that one is offering to do the research for someone else, because then I don't get tangled up in looking ahead to what my own disappointment might be. I just can live in that pure enjoyment part that I like, making spreadsheets and looking up facts, and then I hand it to the person and say, you know, here's the car you should buy.
Yeah.
And they're happy and I'm happy.
Exactly. And Mark, I would say that you can't not face what you've got to face. So at some point, if you want to be free around this for yourself, then you'd have to graduate at some point. I mean, you're not
required,
but you could take that on, right?
I could start a business making decisions for other people.
That's right. Well, because ultimately, there will come a time where you have to do that whatever it is, whether it's fixing your garden gate or buying a car or you know, looking at a medical problem that comes up that's in your life. And so, you know, you've seen it. So perhaps the practitioner needs a little bit of encouragement to see if it's appropriate for him to take that on for himself.
Yes, yes. Thanks very much, Ashwini.
Thanks, Mark.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Mark and Ashwini. We've come to the top of the hour, and it's been a great show, and I'm glad you're here and all of Sangha, and I'm very inspired and grateful.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, go happy.
Thanks for hanging in with the technology. We'll see. We'll hopefully be with you next week.
Yes, yes. Lovely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.